Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
You're listening to 94.3 WYBC. I'm Jose Candelario. Welcome to the Electric Drum. This week, we will speak with Housewives of Atlanta alum and former member of the R&B group Escape, Candy Burris, from the stylistic Arian Love. But we begin today with a conversation with director Lawrence Lamont, who laid his buddy comedy One of Them Days, starring SZA and Kiki Palmer, has become a fan favorite.
And you know what I like about this movie?
It is so rewatchable. Yeah. I've already seen it 2x.
Oh, man, that's amazing. Hey, that's the goal, you know, is to be able to rewatch it, throw it on during a holiday with your family and just let it play. You know, those are my favorite type of films for sure.
Just One of Them Days, you get to work with not only with great actors, you get to work with great producers. How is that being stuck in the middle around so much greatness?
I mean, it keeps you on your A game, you know, for sure. And it's inspiring, you know, to walk into a space every day, whether you're in prep or on set, and you're constantly inspired by your peers. I mean, it's hard to lose when you have that support system and everyone's, so successful and so enthusiastic about making greatness.
You know, we're talking about One of Them Days, currently on digital and in some theaters still to this day, and the physical DVD will be released soon. Yeah. How do you feel? How does it make you feel to have this kind of success?
It feels great, man. I mean, I'm grateful. You know, I mean, I've heard that, you know, when you show gratitude, that's the only time you can feel grounded and elevated at the same time. You know, so that's how I feel. You know, when I read the script 4 years ago, I knew it was something special. I saw my way in. And felt like this was something the world needed, and for it to be resonating with, you know, so many people and people that I didn't even expect for it to resonate with, it's an honor, you know, and it's also hopeful because it shows that, you know, these type of films can be made and you can have success with these type of films, and I hope it opens the door for more to be made similarly.
It's something to be said about making a good quality film with, you know, with just a little bit of money. Not really a little bit. I mean, you still spend like 50 million, but.
Yeah. Yes. It shows that. I mean, you look at the best picture winner of this year at Oscars, Anora. You know, I mean, they made that film for under 10 million, you know, a little less than we made ours with. But it just goes to show a good movie and a good story. Shown to audiences will resonate every time.
Now, one thing I like about this film, people do not take themselves seriously. Is that something that resonates with this next generation?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, in the age of information and social media, everybody's posting their highlight reels and so nonchalant. You know, I definitely think that is a part of what millennials and Gen Z, I think, are like the spearheading that energy, you know, just kind of like, you know, taking it easy all the time. But Alyssa, you know, she kind of gets into some trouble when she's being not taking herself so seriously. And luckily it works out for her at the end.
You've reached number one on Apple in one day. What is resonating with the audience?
You know, I think that actually I don't think we need an escape. You know, I think people need to laugh and, like, just feel good, you know. I love my horror movies. I love my drama, my psychological thrillers. I love them all. You know, but it's something about leaving a theater or finishing a movie on your couch and feeling hopeful and inspiring and uplifting. I think that's, like, the secret ingredient and the secret sauce that our film has, and that even human people around the world may not even know they need to be inspired or need this relief, or this escape, but I get it, you know. So I hope to always make films that can give people an escape and have some core themes in it that inspire you to keep going in life, whether you're an artist or whether you're, you know, work construction.
What was your first project that you completed that made you think that, you know what, I got what it takes to be a director?
Man, probably my first ever project I directed, honestly. It was a music video for a friend when I was about 18 years old. And just like editing it and seeing it come together and seeing the concepts all working, even though it was so simple, it kind of let me know, like, this is what I need to be doing. Like, I'm going to devote my life to spending the rest of my days making this my plan A and my plan B. And it was like a thrill I've just been chasing. So I would say my first project that I directed. And then I also grew up in theater. So I was in stage plays, and I worked with an incredible drama teacher for years that kind of kept me inspired as well, even though I wasn't directing. But my eyes always on the prize of being in the entertainment industry, in the storytelling business somehow.
I'm glad you mentioned storytelling, because a lot about being a director is having vision. How have you tapped into that skill set, and how can you really develop that?
Yeah, you know, I like to say that I'm the sum of my influences. So I'm like well-studied, and I watch as much as I can, and from all the greats and all the acclaimed stuff just over the past century, you know. And, you know, it's interesting talking about style and vision. You know, I guess I do have a style. I have friends and peers that say I do. I think it just continue to grow by just pushing myself creatively with the stories that I tell, you know, not limiting myself or staying in a box. You know, it's like I made one of them days. I don't want to make another movie like one of them days. I want to go somewhere else, you know, and just keep pushing the limits and seeing how far I can go creatively while continuing to uplift and inspire. So new worlds are always going to help me hone in on my vision, and I'm excited to keep going.
Being in theater and in movies, and, you know, you always got to know what everybody else is doing and to know a little bit about every position. As a director, how do you do that and still, like, have your input but still let the people do their thing?
Yeah, well, fortunately for me, I, like, started off making things when pizza was the budget, and it was only about 3 or 4 people in the crew. So I learned very early every department and every department's jobs, and I did everything already as well. But filmmaking is collaborative, you know. Like, I know the director has final creative say and with the studios and whatnot, but it's about everyone being on the same team, you know. I approach it like being a head coach of a football team or something. You know, you need your coordinators, you need, you know, your trainers, you need your ball boys, you know, all to make the vision come to life. So I love to collaborate. It's no such thing as a bad idea to me. You know, I think I'm always do that way, because it takes a village to make a film, truly.
All right, out of the 4 aspects of filmmaking, okay, pre-production, the actual production, post-production, and audience reaction, which one is your favorite?
Oh, man, production. I would say production still is my favorite, yeah. Yeah, it's like being on the playground. It's like putting the story on its legs. It's like so exhilarating, and you're always catching lightning in a bottle, and I don't think you can really, you know, you can really imitate that. Post production is going to be like it's a really close second place for my favorite, you know, because you can reshape the world, and you may see things that you didn't see on set and post, and of course, I always love audience reactions, but those are my top 2.
All right. Now, one of them days, what can people who have not seen it can expect to get out of this film?
I mean, a great time. You know, I think it's just a fun ride, a wild ride, and lots of chuckles. But it's also a story about hope and friendship and community, you know, that I think our world needs more than ever. So have fun. Don't take yourself too seriously watching it. And enjoy the ride.
Shout out to the bodega up in the apartment 2B. I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Lawrence.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence Lamont, director for One of Them Days. And you're listening to 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canelario. And of course, you're listening to The Electric Drum, where now we turn our attention to legend of R&B from the Stylistics, Arian Love, whose humble beginnings in Philadelphia has entertained fans worldwide for decades. Ariane, can you please tell me, how did you get into music, and were you like in a choir or anything like that to get started?
I mean, I listen to artists that have a gospel background, and I don't have a gospel background by no means. I can just hold a melody. So I don't think I'm one of the great singers out there. I just think I've been lucky enough to have a pleasant enough voice to be a part of the stylistics.
You formed a group in 68. How did that come about?
Well, when we graduated from high school, the group that I was in was called the Monarchs. We were left with two singers and a drummer. A group called the Percussions that was also in the same high school. Members from their group went into the military, and they were left with three singers, a guitar player, and a bass player. We combined the two groups, came up with a new name, and started working around Philadelphia. We were approached by a gentleman by the name of Bill Perry. He took us in the studio, recorded our first record, You're a Big Girl Now, and things started from there. Bill got in touch with Avco Records, who released the record national, and then Bill kind of like disappeared. We didn't see Bill anymore. Avco said, well, the first record was so successful, let's do an album, and they got in touch with Tom Bell, and Tom Bell produced our first three albums.
Wow. You know, competition is very healthy, right? And you know, you got rappers beefing now, but back then, who were your rivals?
Wow, Blue Magic, the Dramatics, the Delphonics. Now, the Blue Magic and the Delphonics, both groups are from Philadelphia. And the Blue Magic, when they came out, which was after us, their sound was so close to ours. They had a first tenor that tried to mimic our first tenor. But they used the same musicians that Tom Bell used. In fact, the guitar player, Norman Harris, was their producer, who was the guitar player on a lot of our sessions. So it was very competitive, even though we worked a lot. In fact, until today, we still work together sometimes. And the competitiveness has subsided. They have their fan base, and we have our fan base, and we just, you know, accept it for what it is. And we're friends.
One thing about your band, you still got two out of the three members still to this day. I mean, other people, when you go see them, you know, they swap out everybody. So you really have barely anyone that's original. How does it feel to still be there with you know, Herb and still doing your thing?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's definitely a blessing. Luckily, the lead singer that we have now, Jason, he's been with us 15 years. And we always felt as long as we can give our audience as close to the sound of our original material, we can continue to work. And that what has been happening for the last basically 57 years. And then also the fact that we've had great material in the past that people have fallen in love with and still do to the day. Luck also plays an important part. Herb and I both are 75, and I don't realize it sometime until we say our age on stage and the audience go, ooh. Like, it's such a big deal, but we still enjoy it. We still do our choreography. And like I said, it's all really a blessing to still be here, period.
I mean, I'm sure that the next day you feel it in your bones too.
Yeah, you know, and you don't feel about it. In fact, I did an interview a few days ago, and the gentleman told me, you guys came out in 68. Wow, I was 1 year old in 68. I said, yeah, thanks. That makes me feel nice. Listening to your voice, you sound like another young one.
I won't even tell you when I was born, sir, just to keep it copacetic.
Okay.
But I do admire your fashion. Fashion has come and gone, but your suits can still be worn today. Tell me a little bit about how how you decide what to wear, and you know, and the fact that, you know, your fashion has not gone out of style.
Yeah, well, that's why we call the stylistics. You know, but we've always felt when you come on stage, you got to look presentable. There's some artists out there that come on in jeans and shirts. There's no organization to the way they look on stage. But we refuse to do that. If, for whatever reason, we'll come out on stage in jeans, then you know that the airlines lost our uniforms. That's the only way that would happen, you know. But usually we dress coordinated. Sometimes it's bow ties, sometimes it's regular ties, but it's coordinated.
Oh, yes, I can tell. All right, your music has been covered by many, many artists over the years, but I'm going to pick out two, and you tell me who did it better, okay? So the first is Diana Ross and Marvin Gaye, 73, with Stop, Look, Listen, or Prince's Betcha by Golly Wow.
Well, I prefer Prince's Betcha by Golly Wow, because even though it was the same song, he did a younger curve on it, and I liked his approach. Diana Ross and Marvin Gaye was pretty much straightforward, even though Marvin did a little twist on his approach to the melody, which I like. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because we were in Seattle at a four-day engagement, and I was playing that song for the guys and letting Jason hear Marvin's approach. How could I forget the way he did that little change in melody on it? I liked. But Prince is the one I prefer.
All right. So all these years, you've been out there. You have fans all over. Does it still astound you, the reception you get when you hit the stage?
Yes, it does. And what's happening today, and that's we've seen our fan base get older, and some people come up to us and say, well, you know, your music was the only music that my parents played. And I was like raised on your music. And what amazes me now that we could be singing, like, say, a bitch about Golly Wow. And I'm looking at the audience, and I see so many different responses. I can see some people crying. I can see other people, you know, laughing and clapping their hands. And then different emotion comes from this particular song. And I say, wow, this one song has affected the people that I'm seeing differently now than it did when it came out. So it may be bringing back a loved one that may have passed, and it might have been their favorite record that they share. But there's so many emotions now to our music when we perform it on stage than it was in the 70s. In the 70s, we were just a part of everything that was going on, and it was new music, and no one has grabbed it to a point that it becomes a story of their life. Now we're looking at people, and they come back and tell us. I mean, one couple said, you know, we have three children, and each of them were conceived on one of your songs. That's pretty deep when you think about that not only do our music bring tears and happiness, but people have made love to our music also. So at this stage, it's a little different than 1970.
Well, you're still going to have an opportunity to make babies, because Falling in Love with My Girl is out there right now after 20 years. The Stylistics.
Well,
what should people expect from this album?
Well, honestly, I don't know how much more time we got left, but we were worried about doing this project because the gentleman that produced it is coming from a rock background. And in fact, quite a few of the musicians that he's friends with that he had to perform on this album. And we didn't want to lose our fan base. So the songs that we picked, we tried to pick something that would be fresh, but something that could still be identifiable stylistics material. And so we're hoping that we continue keeping our fan base and we get some new fans with these songs.
Oh, well, thank you very much for your time and have a blessed day. And thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you. You too. Be safe.
Thank you so much, Arian Love of the Stylistics, for sharing your talents with so many of us throughout our lifetimes. You're listening to 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is The Electric Drum. Next up, Candy Burris came onto the music scene with Escape back in the 90s and has not looked back and now is producing for Othello on Broadway. Growing up, were you in a choir, or how did you first get into singing?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I haven't had that question in so long. So when I was McKean, I really just singing around the school. And then I auditioned for the Tri-Cities High School of Visual and Performing Arts with a friend, because she knew I could sing and she really wanted to be in the performing arts program. I really didn't care. I was just like, okay, well, I'll go with you. And I ended up getting in and she didn't, which was crazy. But that one turn, it changed my entire life, because that's where I met my group members. Tamika and Tasha also went to the same high school, and that's where Escape started.
Wow. I get two answers for the price of one. I'm so lucky. Okay, so who was it, you know, in our lives, we always have that one person that believes in us, right? Who'd be like, girl, you can sing. Who was that person that helped nurture your talent?
Well, I mean, I always have to give credit to my mom, you know, just because she was my biggest supporter, you know, growing up. Now, I think in middle school, I had, you know, I used to make the tapes in the middle of the mall where you could record yourself singing somebody else's song or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I remember I did that one time and I was playing it. And my mom, she came in the room and she was like, is that you or is that the real person? And I was like, it's me. She's like, oh my God, you can sing. You can really sing. And I was like, I've been trying to tell you. But after that, you know, she was just supportive. And my brother, you know, who passed away when I was in high school, he was a really big supporter as well. He introduced me and my girls, Escape, when we were young. He introduced us to a man named Ian Burke, who he was like a manager in Atlanta who discovered a lot of artists. So Ian Burke really helped us get our deal with Jermaine Dupri and So Def Records. So shout out to Ian, because he discovered us. He discovered Arrested Development. He discovered, I mean, so many artists out of Atlanta worked with Ian first.
Oh, and now we get some hip hop history. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Part of your personality, I mean, you have great personality. You're so loving. You sound so sweet. How important is that? Because with 10 million followers out there, you know, hinging on your, like, every word, how did you build that? Did you build that by being your authentic self, or did you have to fake it till you make it?
Nah, I definitely just built it by being my authentic self. Now, I would have to obviously credit being on The Real Housewives of Atlanta for so long. It gave me a platform for people to see me, to get to know me, get to know my family, get to know, you know, my businesses, how I think, how I, you know, move. And I think, you know, I guess a lot of people connected with me and wanted to follow me from, you know, the platform that I was on and other things that I do through music. I think, you know, the fact that I do a lot of things, I gain a lot of support from different areas, you know?
You just came back off tour. How is it getting out there and still getting that love like it's 1995?
Oh, my God. When I tell you to still get the love from the fans of our music all these years later, like, if you think about it, Escape, Just Kicking It came out in 1993. And we're in 2025, and people are still singing with us every word, you know? We did a tour with SWV and Escape, the Queens of R&B tour, and it was magical, you know, to have all the different female artists on one tour. Everybody was getting along, you know, and we were having, the audiences were going crazy for every artist, but, you know, it feels good to still be able to do our music after all these years and still have the support of the fans.
Are you astounded about how much love you get from this younger generation and their love for R&B?
That's crazy, right? I think what it is that the 90s was just a great time for R&B music. It was. And I just feel like, you know, whether it's from people sampling or, you know, people just going back, because they say, like, the 90s R&B is, like, you know, one of the highest streamed, you know, playlists, you know, on, you know, a lot of those different streaming platforms. And I don't know, people just connect with, you know, the harmonies, with the real lyrics, the melody, you know, the melody, the way the songs were written during that time were just different, you know, than what's happening now, you know? So I think the younger generation, they're just going back and they're finding it. But, I don't know how they are, though.
Well, you must have tapped into your own Babyface Edmonds, you know, talent. And you've written so many songs, so many. How do you develop your writing skills? And when do you know you had a knack for that? When do you discover that you really had a knack for writing good music?
I feel like, you know, during my teenage years, I was always really good at doing melodies. It's so funny. Ian Burke, you know, he would introduce us to different producers. And one of the producers that when I was just, I don't know, 15 years old, I would just go over there to their house and sing melodies all day to his tracks. He would just be like, just come up, keep singing different melodies. So I would be practicing coming up with melodies over and over and over again to the same track. So I always tell people, it doesn't matter what you play, you can just play a click track and I can write a whole song to it. I don't, you know, I can come up with three different songs to the same track if I needed to. And I don't know if it's because of being around real producers back then and them testing me and pushing me. And then obviously being around Jermaine Dupri, you know, watching him and when he would be writing the songs for Escape and, you know, doing what he was doing, that rubbed off on me too. So I just feel like I picked up a little bit from everybody. And during that process, I started writing songs while we were, you know, doing Escape, but then especially when our group started falling apart and disagreeing, I was telling Tiny, I was like, yo, like, we got to come up with something else. Like, why don't we do a project just the two of you and I? And we started working with producers, coming up with songs for that. And No Scrubs was one of the songs that we had wrote for ourselves. And then L.A. Reid heard it. He wanted it for TLC. And that's really what opened the door for me to write for other people.
Hmm. Other credits, songwriting and producing, Bills, Bills, Bills with Destiny Childs, Pink's There You Go, Ariana Grande's Break Up With Your Girlfriend On Board, Ed Sheeran's The Shape of You, and the list goes on and on. You are now producing. What skill sets transfer, right, from being a performer, being like a really good producer?
You know what? I personally feel that being in the music industry helped me to think differently of how to promote. So, you know, coming from that the era of when I was doing music, we used to always, you know, grassroots promotion. So we would go in every market and we'd be promoting our albums. We would be doing live performances. We'd be doing everything that we could to get awareness out about our music. So I feel like I took that same perspective as it, you know, when it comes to producing the plays that that I'm a part of. So this is my, Othello is my fourth Broadway production. But we've been, even in, you know, the last few productions that I've done, we broke records with ticket sales and different things. And a lot of times it's because, in my opinion, because we promote differently than what a lot of people have done when it came to, you know, promoting a Broadway show. And I always tell, like, you know, our team, I'm like, hey, you know, obviously we could use my platform of getting the word out there about the shows, whether it be through my Facebook pages or my Instagram pages. But we also, you know, like moments like this, like me talking to you and doing radio in places, not just within New York City market, but all over. You know, I'm going everywhere to promote our show and let people know about what's happening with Othello and Denzel and Jake Gyllenhaal being the stars of our show. Like, a lot of everyday people that don't live in New York, a lot of times they were overlooked when it came to promoting for the Broadway shows because people just didn't think about it. But for us, you know, a lot of our ticket sales are from people who fly in to see our shows, you know?
Mm-hmm. We're in that day and age, people will fly to enjoy the experience for the weekend. You are correct.
Right.
One last little word for the young little black girls out there that are dreaming to become big. What advice you got for them?
Ooh, I say never allow anybody to tell you what you can't do. I've had so many people throughout my life and throughout my career who laughed when I told them about dreams that I've had. I remember when I first started writing and I played a song for somebody and I was like, yeah, hopefully they'll let us be the executive producer of our project. And that person laughed in our face and was like, who's going to let you executive produce something? Not only have I, you know, produced music for artists, you know, or been executive producer of projects with music, but, you know, I've been executive producer on TV shows and now Broadway. You know, and so it's like, never allow what anybody's opinion is to affect what you do when you're going after your dreams.
Thank you, Candy Burris, for your time and all of my guests this evening, Lawrence Lamont, director of One of Them Days, and from the Stylistics, Arian Love. For 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City, I'm Jose Candelario. And of course, this has been The Electric Drum. And like always, thank you for listening.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.